Welcome to SCOTUS Cast. On January 16, 2008, the court decided the case of New York State Board of Elections versus Lopez Torres. The court held that the New York system of choosing party nominees for the state Supreme Court does not violate the First Amendment. Goods and Duns' Matt McGill discusses the case. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Attorney McGill.
My name is Matt McGill, and along with Ted Olson, I represented the New York State Board of Elections in the case of New York State Board of Elections versus Lopez Torres, argued before the Supreme Court on October 3, 2007, and decided on January 16, 2008. The case concerns New York State's system for electing the justices of its Supreme Court, which is confusingly, in New York State, the trial court of general jurisdiction. Specifically, the case involved New York State system pursuant to which the major parties of the state select their nominees for the general election, which ultimately elects the new justices of the Supreme Court. After experimenting with direct primaries for several years, in 1921, the legislature concluded that primaries were an undesirable method for parties to select nominees. And it therefore enacted something of a hybrid system. In this hybrid system, party members elect delegates, directly elect delegates, and then in what's called a delegate primary. And then the delegates attend, the elected delegates attend a convention where the party delegates select the party's nominee, who will compete in the general election. There are delegate primaries held in each of the dozens of assembly districts in New York State. The state is divided into 12 judicial districts, and each judicial district has dozens of assembly districts within it, such that you'll have, going to each judicial district's convention, a number of delegates who are elected from districts throughout that judicial district. Now, this hybrid system has been, for many years in New York State, widely criticized as giving rise to all sorts of corruption and effectively turning the trial court of general jurisdiction into a patronage dumping ground for friends of political bosses. This consequence arises out of what is essentially another criticism of the system, is that it places far too much power in the hands of party leaders. The argument goes that average party members really can't be bothered to educate themselves as to the candidates for judicial delegate, again, those who will attend the convention, much less run for that position. So what in practice happens, according to the opponents of this system, is that the voters, the party bosses, the local party bosses, organize a slate of delegates in each assembly district, and that if they are opposed at all, and more often than not they are not opposed in the delegate primary, their opponent is poorly funded, poorly organized, and is effectively unable to compete, so that the party bosses' hand-picked delegates are the ones that in fact attend the ultimate judicial convention. And once at the judicial convention, the delegates simply do the party boss's bidding. Certain people in New York had complained, basically led to a situation where if you were not the close personal friend or ally of a party boss, you had no hope of ever obtaining the nomination of the Democratic or the Republican Party for the position of Supreme Court Justice. It was simply in the hands of party bosses, and if And if at any time in your career you should happen to offend a party boss, that was essentially the end of your political aspirations. This case was brought by just one such disappointed judicial candidate, a woman named Margarita Lopez Torres, who tried in vain for a number of years to obtain the Democratic Party's nomination for the position of New York Supreme Court Justice. She had at some point in her career crossed a party boss, and that party boss decided to, she alleged, exact revenge by making sure she was never nominated for the position, which essentially rendered her unable to compete for the position, she argued. She filed her suit in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of New York before Judge Gleason, and she there argued that New York's system for this system that New York State had set up, the hybrid system for selecting justices of the Supreme Court, the major party nominees for that position, that this system violated the First Amendment because it placed severe burdens on her right to compete in the party nominating process. That was her core allegation. The district court found in her favor. The district court held that the delegate primary system effectively required somebody to run a slate of delegates, and that only somebody who had the resources and the organizational skill of a party boss could possibly accomplish that. Therefore, the district court held that the system placed severe burdens on so-called insurgent candidates and rendered insurgent candidates unable to compete for the major party's nomination. The district court held that the system violated the First Amendment on that ground, and then went one step further and enjoined the state of New York from holding delegate primaries and ordered the state of New York to hold direct primaries for the position to select major party nominees for these positions until such time, at least, that the state of New York developed a new system that cured the constitutional deficiencies. On appeal to the Second Circuit affirmed, for largely the reason stated by the district court. Like the district court, the Second Circuit found that New York State system did impose severe burdens on the ability of insurgent candidates to compete in party nominating contests. It found again that the slate of the fact that in order to effectively compete, in order to have any possibility of winning the party contest, the nominating contest, the court found that a insurgent candidate would have to run a slate of delegates, and that was simply an impractical, impossible task for somebody who did not have the resources of the political party behind them. The New York State Board of Elections, joined by the political parties of the state, the New York County Democratic Committee, the New York State Republican Party, and an association of New York State judges, all sought Supreme Court review from the decision of the Second Circuit. The Supreme Court eventually did grant cert, and the case proceeded to be briefed on the merits. For our part, representing the New York State Board of Elections, we presented three arguments in favor of upholding the current system for selecting major party nominees. First, we argued that insurgent candidates had no First Amendment right to compete in the party nominating contest. We argued essentially that because New York State permitted insurgent candidates like Margarita Lopez Torres to compete in the general election simply by obtaining a relatively modest number of signatures. It had no, insurgent candidates like her had no independent First Amendment right to compete in the nominating contests of the party of their choice. Such a First Amendment right, we argued, would intrude very deeply into the protected expression and affairs of political parties. Second, we argue that even if insurgent candidates had such a First Amendment right, that New York State system did not, in fact, burden that right in any meaningful way. The Court of Appeals, the Second Circuit, instead of looking to the actual language of the statute and the burdens of the the burdens that the statute actually imposed, looked instead to what it called the realities of the scheme. And it was those realities, not the statute that itself, that imposed the supposed burdens of running a slate of delegates in the primary, and it was the realities of the political system that gave party leaders, as opposed to any particular party member, great influence in a party convention. We argue that the statute itself, on the other hand, did not itself impose any burdens on candidates such as Margarita Lopez-Torres, and it did not in any way prevent her from competing for the nomination. Her complaint, we argued, was simply that she did not perceive a realistic opportunity to win under the current system, and the First Amendment does not protect a right to win. The final argument was simply that in joining the system, and specifically in imposing a direct primary, the New York State had gone, the Second Circuit rather, had gone a step too far, and at most it should have enjoined the system and allowed the New York State Board of Elections in the first instance to select the system that would replace it, a decision, an agency decision that would be guided by the relative legislative intent in 1921 to avoid precisely these types of these direct primaries that the district court and then the Second Circuit imposed. For their part, the respondents presented essentially two arguments in response. First, they argued that the political parties have a right to select their nominees, and that New York State's system of the delegate primary system unduly interferes with the political party's ability to select the nominee of its choice, by granting undue influence to party leaders as opposed to the rank-and-file party membership. The respondent's second argument was that in fact, the similar to what the Second Circuit had the basis on which the Second Circuit had ruled in respondents' favor, the respondents argued that the system did in fact impose severe burdens, and it was in fact certain provisions of the law, particularly the provision that required that delegates be elected from each and every assembly district, that imposed severe burdens on the ability of poorly funded insurgent candidates to compete in party nominating contests. The Supreme Court unanimously affirmed, with Justice Scalia delivering an opinion for 7 justices and Justice Kennedy concurring in the judgment along with Justice Breyer. Justice Scalia first dispensed with respondents' first argument that somehow New York State's system was violating the rights of political parties to select their nominees. Justice Scalia noted that the political parties were on the side of the Board of Elections in this case, and that it was that individual party members could not take up the mantle of the political party in their effort to force their way into its political processes. He wrote, respondents who claim their own associational right to join and have influence in the party are in no position to rely on that right that the First Amendment confers on political parties. Justice Scalia next addressed the question of whether New York State's system imposed severe burdens on the electoral, on their ability of insurgent candidates to compete in these nominating processes, and found that it did not, that he held, as we had argued, that respondents here were actually claiming a right to win, and that the First Amendment did not protect any such right. The right to reasonably to prevail in their a right, as he wrote, in assuring that they will have a fair chance of prevailing in their party's candidate selection process, finds no support in our precedents. On that basis, Justice Scalia noted that what respondents were really complaining about were simply the realities of the political system, and noted that where ballot access requirements have been invalidated, those requirements focused not in the manner in which political actors functioned in the political process, but rather on those on the requirements themselves, such as where a signature requirement was unduly burdensome or a filing fee was unduly burdensome. The respondents, by contrast, were pointing to burdens that were imposed essentially by political actors acting as politicians within a political system. This, Justice Scalia held, did not violate the First Amendment. That concludes my podcast concerning New York State Board of Elections versus Lopez-Torres. It was a pleasure to work on this case, and I'm thrilled that we were able to achieve a favorable outcome for our client. Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.